Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
I am your host, Tanya Communication Doctor, and the reason I do this show is because I want to provide a space for people to speak their authentic truth, coming from a heart space rather than a head space. Allow people to get into their space of consciousness, their space of confidence, and their space of connection. This, I think, promotes positive mental health, and this is why I do what I do.
Hi, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor, and today on my show I have the lovely David Solomon, and David is known as the Progress Junkie. Hi David, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good, pretty good.
Brilliant, brilliant. And just tell me, because it's quite interesting, because I discovered David on Instagram, and I must admit, social media is really, really, really powerful, but I'm honest, I was just blown away by all of your muscle pictures, because you were demonstrating, you know, you're doing personal training, he's doing X amount of press-ups, incredibly strong, you know, and then I thought, God, I need to look a little bit deeper, because there's more beyond these muscles, there's more beyond the surface, yeah? As I started to dive deeper, I started to realise, oh my God, this guy is actually a personal trainer, but you're also about mindset. And you're also about the mind. So tell my audience a little bit about the Progress Junkie brand and what that's about. Fire away.
Progress Junkies is basically, it's a lifestyle, okay? I believe that the true key to being happy as a human is to constantly be making progress in some area. That's the only time we feel good, right? We never feel good when we're the same person over and over. We only feel good or happy we're making progress. And I believe that by marrying progress, you give birth to not just the process, but you give birth or you give an avenue for the better you to actually be manifested and to come into reality. Mm. So progress in every area is a mandatory thing. It's a lifestyle, fitness, eating, whatever it is, progress in every area towards something positive. It's definitely, that's the whole objective of my brand, to encourage that.
Beautiful. I just took what you just said there. No, progress, to get the better you to progress to your own reality. That's really powerful, what you just said there, finding your reality. So I want to kind of dive in deep, because when it's a coaching industry, people don't just fall into this coaching industry. There's always something behind that that's a little bit deeper. So what was your journey? What got you into this industry? Why you feel it was so important to want to help and support other people? So what went on in your life? What was that moment that you thought, gosh, I really want to turn my life around and help others? So what was your challenge there?
I noticed when I was young, I always had an affinity for it. I didn't know what it was. You know, my mother died when I was 12. I watched my mother pass away when I was a kid. So I was homeless from 12 to about 17. Okay. I lived in people's homes. I lived in basements and everything. When I was a child, people always came and wanted to talk, you know, hey, David, I'm sitting here. And for some reason, I always had an answer. It was like, I didn't go to a coaching school at 9, you know, and I was like this Einstein of coaching. I always had an answer that was relative and it was respectful. And as I grew up and became a young man, it only increased. And then I went through a divorce. I was married for 13 years. I got 3 beautiful kids from my ex-wife. Great woman, great children. My son's a computer scientist. My daughter's a journalist, about to go to New York. My other baby's an architect. Great kids. But after my divorce, for those that went through it, you go through this phase of breaking where you literally lose yourself in all the pieces. Mm. And I went through that. I gave up the home. I gave up because you don't make the woman homeless. You don't do that. You know, I'm not that kind of guy. You know, she got everything. We're still friends. We got married. I was like 17, 18. We're like kids when we got married, you know? So it was never like a long dating thing. I knew her for 3 months and I put a ring on her hand. Right. So it lets you know, I don't mind committing. You just need to be the right one. Right. But anyway, so when that happened, I moved in with a friend and I lived in his basement. He's like my brother. I love him to death. He's like my brother. And during that time frame, he was going through his divorce simultaneously, ironically, and so was I.
Wow.
And sleeping on an air mattress in a basement next to a pit bull, after coming from a 3-bedroom home with 9-foot vaulted ceilings property to that, it really woke me up. Mm. Like, I looked in the mirror and I looked at myself and I was like, David, this can't be it. This cannot be it. This can't be it. And so what I did was I'll roll out the bed off the little air mattress, because the dog would always, for some reason, the dog had claws. He would poke the mattress and it would be, I'll be sleeping on it up in the morning. And then at night I'm on the floor and it's blowing air out. And it was just horrible, right? So I'll roll out of the bed. I would do push-ups because I was in the Marines for 10 years. I did 10 years in the military, the invasion of Iraq after 9/11. That was all of us. So I resorted back to something I could control. And what I could control was my development. That was all I had. My truck, it blew up. I had no job. I had warrants for my arrest, not for criminal things, but because I couldn't afford to pay child support. I didn't have a job. So I had no job, no car, a warrant for my arrest. I'm on a basement floor next to a dog. I have no money. I was done. All I had was who David knew he was. That's all I had. Gosh, and so when I wrote it.
I want to go back because you've just given me so much there, David. I don't even know if you realize how much information that you've just thrown at me. And I'm just trying to take it all apart because, first of all, when you said your mum died when you were 12 years old, for me, mm-hmm. that's a shift, you know? I mean, I've lost both my parents, so I totally empathize with you, but I wasn't as young as 12, you know, when it happened. And then you started talking about your divorce. That's another shift. I'm breathing it out, yeah? And then you've got your amazing three children. Then you're homeless. I'm breathing it out. And then the next idea, you said you were in the Marines. So I want to kind of go back to dive in a little bit deeper. And I'm gonna go straight to, you know, being 12 years old and losing your mother. That's tough. Mm-hmm. And then I want to understand how you became homeless from that, because what happened there? Because for me, there's a little bit of a gap there. So I want to kind of find out what's that, because there's a real beautiful journey here, because obviously you're a strong person. You've gone through so much and you're probably so resilient that you don't even realize how tough, you know, you've just get on with life. But when you digest it, there's some big shifts there. There's some big shifts, you know? So just take me back there to how you ended up homeless from after your mum passing.
Well, after my mom had passed, again, my sisters, our older sisters, we're best friends now. I love them. I love my sisters.
Excellent.
At the time, my sisters were recovering. My mother was an alcoholic for a long part of her life.
Wow.
So she did tremendous damage to my sisters. I love my sisters. Mm. So when my mother died, this was the first time she had been sober for that long. She was only sober because I was born. Mm. So I never met the alcoholic mom that they knew. I met the sober woman. And oh, so when she sobered up.
Mm. Huh? So you're the youngest. You're the youngest out of the lot.
I'm the baby. I'm the baby. Brilliant. I'm the youngest. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And so what happened was, when she died, my sisters were moving on with their lives. You know, they were married, you know, had boyfriends, and they rightfully so. Because they spent most of their childhood taking care of me, because my mother was out on drunk tirades, missing, and things of that nature. You know, and I love my mom. My mom was a great woman on the end. She, you know, she had her choice. She had her struggles, but she was still a great woman. I'm not trying to, you know, badmouth my mom. But my sisters didn't know how to deal with all that. They didn't. I mean, no one taught them. And so when she died, I was the missing piece. I was the leftover. So I went into one of my sister's homes. And at the time, even for my brother, like, I know they're going to see this. I love him too. Everything was different then. I'm 42. I was a kid, right? He was used to having a home a certain way. He didn't marry her and her little brother. Mm. He didn't. Mm. But he had to learn that with my sisters, it's an all or nothing deal, baby. You take us, he come too. It was how it is. They wasn't about to throw me away. But the part that hurt me is that when I watched her struggle in her marriage because of me being there, because of his discomfort,
wow,
I left. Wow. I left.
Wow, that takes a lot for
yeah. I love.
Wow.
I saw her crying. I saw her fighting with it. Now, he wasn't domestic, nothing like that, but yelling and they're fighting. He's like, I don't want him here. And he's not my son and all of this stuff. And hearing that, for me, being in a home, I don't have a mom. My dad's across town. He didn't pick me up. My father actually left me at the funeral home where my mother was at.
Wow.
He was actually scheduled to pick me up and take me. He looked at me. He took a swig of his whiskey out of his suit and he walked out the funeral home and left me there.
Wow.
Right. So with that being said, I was unowned. Mm-hmm. But when I saw my sister doing everything she could to keep the peace in her home because I was there, but he just wouldn't let up. I was wise enough as a child to understand that David, whether you want to accept it or not, son, he's not going to give her peace until you're gone.
Mm.
And so I left.
Yeah.
12 years old, I walked out the door. I told my sister I love her. It was a really bad argument. I left and I never came back.
Wow.
And so I moved in with friends. I lived in people's bay. Everybody loved me. Everybody liked me. I wasn't a bad kid. Didn't smoke, didn't drink, wasn't in jail. I was really a great kid, you know? Mm. But that part of my life was hard. You know, my family couldn't take me. So I always had to be the third wheel in somebody's home.
Yeah.
And that is a very uncomfortable feeling when you're sitting at a table, you know, and they welcome you and they're doing all the courteous things, but it's still not my family.
Wow.
You know, so
I want to pull that thread together. So how did you, because obviously that's a lot to go through. Like you say, you described it as being the third wheel and also hearing that someone doesn't want you in the home as well. That's damaging as well. Psychologically, I feel people sometimes don't realize what they're saying in front of children, how much children listen or young people listen and take everything in. And it affects you on a deeper level. So how did you come, in terms of the positive, in terms of shining the light, how did you kind of find the strength to come through that to discover who David is?
How should I put it? The combination of faith and deductive logic, right?
Love that.
Faith.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a dad, right? So I didn't have a checklist.
Mm.
I didn't have anything to measure myself against.
Mm.
I didn't have a reference point.
Yeah.
But I do notice, and this is what I believe about, you know, people, I feel whatever they believe, what I believe about the universe, I'll say universe, I heard your verbiage earlier. What I do notice is that whenever you get in certain predicaments that are outside of your control, every now and again, I say God, God sends an angel, a nudge, a sign, a whisper, an indicator. David, go this way. David, over here, that. And it was those subtle indicators that literally led me through the path to get to the man that I am now.
Beautiful. So it sounds to me like there, I mean, I would call that like a spiritual awakening almost, you know, because there's some people who are Christians and, or no matter, doesn't matter what religion you are, but there's some people that connect, but when you have that spiritual awakening, it's something deeper, as you said, you know, the angels, the whispers. So would you say that you, from what you're saying, you're hearing these things or you're connecting with the angels and those are the people
I've met in your life?
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
I've physically met a couple. And this is where the deductive logic part came in, right? This is how I knew something was different about me. All right.
Yeah.
This is my experience. I didn't meet God in the church. I didn't meet him, you know, doing the, I didn't meet him on that. I met my God through my life experience.
Mm.
And it wasn't someone taught me to pray. No, I met him because I kept noticing the same light just kept showing. Prime example. Mm. I was at a McDonald's one time. I'll never forget it. Now I don't have a real place to stay. I'm walking around. I'm in McDonald's and I see this guy, white guy, long hair. He used to go to my school. He was wrestling with something. He was struggling with something. And I just took it upon myself because I didn't know I was a coach then. It was just David. Hey, how you doing, man? Okay. You look at it now. And so I'm getting into him, talking to him, and we're having this conversation, and he was debating about his faith. I didn't know him. He didn't believe in God. He just didn't believe, and that's fine. That's his belief system. But I was like, you know, I was, oh, no, there's something there, man. You got to believe, light, good, and I'm talking. And I never forget it. I'm sitting there talking to the guy, and, you know, we get to a stalemate, a friendly stalemate, and this guy walks in from across the highway. Just out of the blue, walks into McDonald's, He turns around. He doesn't go to the counter. He sits right next to me on the table, but he puts his feet up.
Wow.
He puts his feet up and he holds his knees. And I'm sitting here like, you know, does anybody see this weirdo with his feet on the table? Like, who is this guy?
Oh, see, that's funny.
The other young guy, he walked out. He was already gone. This is how I knew something was special.
Yeah.
Because the guy that came in the store sat next to me. He looks over at me and he says, I quote, I'm not exaggerating. He says, the next time you talk to people who don't have faith like that, it's best to say it this way. And then he gets up and just walks out of McDonald's. He didn't even get any french fries. He got, who goes to McDonald's without any french fries? He didn't even get fries. He just walked out. And those type of signs and indicators were letting me know I was on a divine path. I was on a different journey. And so I spent a lot of it by myself.
You know what?
A lot of it.
Do you feel that could be, you know, with your mum passing, do you feel like it's partly her helping, looking after you, guiding you, showing you the light, showing you those pathways? Do you have that belief system?
I believe indirectly. And here's why, because my mother told me, and this was, she was a horrible jokester. Her jokes were the worst. I mean, they were bad. Right? No, I'm like, you know, she pulled out, you know, the machine with the heart monitor. She snatched it out of the machine. It was like, ha ha ha, and fell back into bed. Like, it was funny. Like, she did that. Like, no lie. She was horrible. Just horrible with the jokes. But the nuggets that I got from her and what she told me, because I'm rooting my face. She said, David, when I die, she said, don't come to my gravesite because I won't be there.
Wow. Should be looking off. Yeah.
And, you know, that's hard to take. At 12, I'm laying next to my mom. She's dying of cancer. She's losing her mind. She's losing her weight. And I'm laying in the bed with her. She rolls over and tells me this. So my belief in God was rooted in that, you know, in that hellish experience of watching my mother, you know, expire and ascend and go upstairs. But through my life, I believe that indirectly her prayers were answered. I think God has just been David. And so I've been led to people that needed help. I've always had abilities to hear them and do good at it. So it's kind of how I turned into the coach. But the progress junkie was after the divorce. So
totally. So let's go to that new transition, because thank you for sharing that with me, because obviously, you know, there's a lot there. As I said, I just had to breathe it out. And what I was picking up as I was listening, because I don't know, seeing you on social media and, you know, your fitness crazy, which has been, I used to train really hard back in the day. I used to do training as well as teach Pilates and dance. So I totally could resonate when I could see you. Not anymore. I mean, I'm past that now. I don't do that now. That's not my importance. But I know the intensity of it. Do you know what I mean? Because I know that with the free weights, everything else, but you sometimes take it to another level. So do you feel like the fitness for you is a survival? Kind of just explain that. Explain your passion for the fitness and your passion for pushing your body to that extreme, because you do some extreme things.
I try
and
then, a little bit.
And I suppose that will get you to another point. Now, when you're doing those extreme and you're working that hard, it will take you to another level. So just explain a little bit about that side of the progress junkie and how you help other people as well. There comes.
I think my mindset with the gym, like, I'm going right after we leave here, right? I'm right after this, right?
I'm sure that is the case. I can get that already, you know. The gym is your life. But no, yeah, but tell me about how that feels. I think
I would say
that, you know, feeling.
I think the training part for me, it grounds me, right? Not just grounding me. It's three things with the training. One, it grounds me. Two, it grinds me, right? And three, it's therapeutic for me.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I was thinking.
Very much so, because when I'm lifting weights, I know it may sound kind of crazy, it's just me. When I lift weights, I'm lifting weights so I can prepare my mind and my body for what life is going to throw at me. That's it, right? We're all one phone call away from some devastating news, right? Our average life expectancy is about 80 years, 80, 90 years if you're lucky, right? I'm 42. I'm halfway done. I'm done. I'm halfway finished. I'm halfway out of here. But until then, right? Until it's time to check out, no. I'm going to become the man that I know my mother would be proud of, and I'm going to become the man that will be known for changing lives, and you need to look like the change you're talking about. And I see a lot of coaches, a lot of speakers, they speak good. They don't look the part, right? I don't want to be a speaker, and I don't knock speaker. I mean, everyone got their struggles. I'm not knocking speakers that wrestle. I'm not saying that. But I know for me, my mark, my bar, the bar I set for me is when I walk on a stage to speak to people to change lives, I want my body to reflect my discipline. I want my words to reflect my lifestyle, and I want my bank account to reflect my consistency. I want to be a man on all four pillars that when you look at, this is a man. That I don't want to be, he speaks good, but he don't look this here.
That's quite interesting. I find that interesting. I mean, I totally understand where you're coming from in terms of, you know, the discipline it does take. It does take a lot of discipline, doesn't it, with the gym and to do all the work that you do. I mean, I've witnessed that myself. So I get you there, and to look the part. But for me, I suppose I'm always about, it's about what's inside most definitely, you know, because for on a conscious level, I mean, you said that quite beautifully when you talked about your awakening and connecting. On a conscious level, it's about the mind and connecting the mind and actually being in the present moment. I always, that's my belief system, I suppose. So, but everybody has their vice, don't they? Everybody has their vice. And for you, it's obviously something that makes you feel amazing. And you, when you feel good, you look good. And you, like you say, you want to model that behavior. So when you go out, it's like, yes, I'm presenting this. You know, you're presenting yourself and you feel good. You feel good. So it's your vice. I would say that's your vice. You know, everyone's got their vice, haven't they? And it's a healthy vice. It's not drugs. It's not.
I don't drink or smoke. I don't drink or smoke. Yeah. I don't do clubs. Yeah. It's just,
There you are.
No, I want to be it.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. That's amazing. So how do you, like, when you work with clients, you work with clients from the physical and also the mental. So how? These two, they work together so well. And there's a lot of people don't really see that marriage. Some people are, because I've met them. I've been in the fitness industry and I've met a lot of people who were mega fit. And for me, I remember meeting a lot of people in the fitness industry who were big as children. You know, they were big children. And there's like there's a complex, and it's almost like, I have to run every day. I have to do this. And I was like that myself to a certain extent. I wasn't a big kid because I always danced when I was young. But I'd be looking at myself in the mirror, looking at the dimples here. I'd be obsessed with my body. But then that was too far. That went too far, looking back. That obsession with the body was too far. And I kind of had to retreat and connect with the mind. But how do you marry those two? Because they're two, some people can be super healthy, but mentally damaged. Talk to me about that, how you manage the mind and the body. Because
when I coach people, I've had training sessions where the person was crying, not from the weights, but because of the dialogue while we were training. So while you're working out, I have a good sense of humor, right? And I use my sense of humor as a gateway to get the heart to open so I can peek in and see what you're wrestling with. People joke about things they heard about. But unless you know how to present the right question, you won't get the right answer. So I present the right question that gives me an answer, that gives me just a peek. That's what they're dealing with. And what I do is I'll talk around it enough, and it creates a magnetic environment to where what they're dealing with, it's attracted to the conversation. Now it comes out. I don't have to pull it out. I don't have to play you. I don't have to poke him. No, none of that. I'm going to talk around, because I had to learn that from 12 to 40.
Wow, yeah.
Right, this law 6,000 hours, right? So if that law rings true, I've been a professional coach well over 15 years. Right, from real tried and true.
It's come from
I connect
life.
Them that way. I connected that way. And while they're working out or they're training, I had one lady I was talking to, beautiful lady, great lady. She was training and she was into it. I looked at her confidence and her face was different. I was like, you're training, but you're not here.
I get that, you know, I get that. And I'm going to tell you a short story, if you don't mind me interjecting, because I was so connected with what you're saying, because I remember the year that my parents passed, and I remember seeing a personal trainer myself, because I was thinking, you know, I was sleeping a lot, basically, you know, that was my coping mechanism. I just went to bed. I wanted to escape the world. I didn't want to face the world. Yeah. And I just remember doing a session, and we were doing the boxing, you know, and he's going to get into it. And as I was boxing, I say half an hour in, I just started crying, you know, it just came out of nowhere. Tears started coming down my eyes. I was just like, you know, it just all came out. And I thought that what's quite interesting is when you do that, sometimes the emotion gets pumped up inside you, and you don't know when you're going to explode. You don't know when you're going to release it. And I must admit, I feel that the personal trainer guy I was working with, he was just so kind. And the way that he dealt with the situation was just, and that's when it gave me another kind of level of respect, because you kind of have to go through stuff in life to understand it. You know, and when you are personal training, you think, okay, this woman's breaking down. What's she doing? What do I do? And he was just so kind to me at that moment. You know, he stopped the session. He said, Tania, then he took me for a stretching, took me for a stretching session, because I like to stretch. And it just brought my energy down and totally relaxed me. And actually I left there and I feel like I shifted something. That's the power sometimes of that one-to-one. I mean, I'm not the greatest boxer, but just boxing or going to that level and releasing that energy was so powerful. So I could totally identify when you were just saying that when you're working with somebody, there's so many different layers to training that a lot of people probably don't realize that you have to work with. And there's some people that go and they have low certificates for being a coach, but it sounds to me that you've got a certificate of life, do you know, life experience. And no, you can't buy that, can you?
I've learned to piggyback one more thing is that when you're lifting weights or you're boxing, when you're working out, what people tend to do is we put ourselves in a mind state that gets us the energy we need to do what we're doing. When I'm working out, I'm not sitting there listening to birds chirping, right? I'm not listening to Tayo meditation rhythms when I'm working out, right? I'm either putting myself in an emotional state. I'm about to lift this student loan off my chest, right? I'm about to lift off the fact that I'm doubting myself. Mm. I'm about to fight the fact that I'm afraid or I'm scared or intimidated or insecure. And what people do when they train is they pull from those emotions secretly. But when you're coaching them, if you can see where they're pulling the emotions from, that's the money. Mm. You weren't boxing the thing. You were boxing the anger. All the feelings were coming out in the movements, and it just manifested itself in tears. And that is the coaching part. Mm. If you get the body moving, you can open the heart. Mm. But most people, like you said, I slept in that basement for almost 2 months. Mm. I mean, nothing. And I'm an outgoing person. I'm outgoing. 2 months in the dark, just sitting next to a dog, use the bathroom, sit down, cry, talk to the dog, cry, pray. It was horrible. Oh my God, it was horrible. I hated it, right? But that's the coaching part that I'm good at. Mm. So I can get a certificate from Les Brown. I can get one from Tom. I could get it. But I've learned this here. People now, and I'm being so honest, people now are getting coaching and good advice mixed up. You're getting mixed up. Mm. You can give good advice and not be a great coach. Coaching is something I believe is a skill set developed through the trials of life and maturity handling those things. That's a coach. A lot of people got 15 certificates. Are you certified? Certified by who?
I love that. Yeah. Exactly. Who puts that person up there as a guru? Exactly. You know,
certified by who?
Yeah, I love that.
They did it to Tony Robbins. They ran him through this big old gamut about it. So he laughed and it was so funny. He was like, certified by who?
Yeah.
Like, I've touched 50 million lives. The evidence, I mean, not to be preachy, but even Paul said it, the evidence of my apostleship is in the people. The evidence of my coaching ability is in the people I've coached. You want to see if I'm real? Ask them.
That's it. No, I'm with you. That's what's important.
You can't back.
So saying that, who inspires you to saying that, you know, You mentioned Tony Robbins there. You mentioned, like you say, you've. So who is your inspiration? I love the facial expression there.
I'm trying to figure out who is my inspiration.
Yeah, who are you inspired by? Yeah, come on.
If I had to pick who inspires me, who really, really inspires me, it's a hybrid of people. I love, and I know when I tell you the inspiration, it does. They don't translate into me when you see me, but I love them. Okay,
go for it.
I love Jim Rohn.
You love who, sir?
Jim Rohn. He's an old coach, passed away. Jim Rohn, I love him. Oh. I love Jim Rohn. I love John Maxwell. Mm-hmm. I love Jocko. Jocko was an ex-Navy SEAL. He's a motivational speaker. I love David Goggins. Mm. It's a hybrid of people that I pick and they say you eat the meat and throw away the bones, right? I pick different parts of them in a nice goulash and you get meat. That's all
brilliant,
I can say.
Brilliant, brilliant. So what do you like about them? Tell me what you like about them or what stands out to you, what draws you to that work?
What I like about Tony, Mr. Robbins, is how he's able to keep his energy state the way he does. I'm 6'4", 230. Tony's like 6'7", 6'4". He is massive.
I think 6'4" is tall. That is tall.
I'm at Tony's shoulder. I'm 6'4". I'm probably at his shoulder, right at his chin. Wow. He's a big man.
Yeah.
I love his energy state. Jim Rohn, I love his wisdom. Wisdom I'm addicted to. I love wisdom. Wisdom is, I could sit down and read wise quotes and put parables together all day. I just get a kick out of it. I'm a nerd. I don't care. I love wisdom. Jim Rohn's wisdom is amazing. John Maxwell, his sweet spirit. He is so kind. He will change your life. He is so kind, but he will drop something on you to have you laughing and crying. I went out laughing right here. Like, oh, you're right. I love that. As for Jocko and David Goggins, the Navy SEALs, it's kind of obvious, right? No excuse, right? Push it. I've had times I've gotten up at 3:25 in the morning, went a 3-mile run and swam 2 miles. Like, push it. Push yourself. If you're not pushing yourself, if you're comfortable with those two, it's the being comfortable putting yourself in uncomfortable circumstances so you continually make progress. Running towards what you don't want to do. That's it. So Jocko and David, I love those two. And running towards what I don't want to do builds me. It expedites my dream from my future into my, it brings it closer to me. So those are the key components of those guys. I love it. I just absolutely love it.
I always love to ask that question because it's always great to see an insight on who people are inspired by. I mean, I must admit, I'm Tony Robbins. I feel that he's a little bit aggressive, personally. And that's just the personal, I suppose, me personally. But that's what's so beautiful, because there's a coach for everyone, you know? And sometimes some people need that aggression, you know, to kind of push them to another level. And some people need a bit more of a nurturing. That's why I think it's so important to find the right person for you at the time, depending on what you're going through or what you're ready to let go of. Because I suppose Tony gets people to a trigger point in one session. You know, see what I mean?
He's good, ain't he? He's so good.
Yeah. But that could be so much for someone to take on, you know? But so that's interesting, isn't it? Really, depending on the personality types. I think we're all different personality types, aren't we? We're all different archetypes. And some people could be quite destroying to absorb all of that. And other people, that could be like a breakthrough moment. So, yeah, no, I love that. I love it's interesting talking to that. And that makes sense just with what I learn of you as well, with regards to how you like to work hard, how you like to push yourself, and how you're physical as well. Because I suppose you're not just the mind, you're physical too. And that gives another level in terms of how you're working. I suppose when people work with you, they probably know what to expect. They're coming for a reason. Have you got much male clients? I must ask you this question. Have you got much male clients? Because I'm sure you've got loads of female clients. Have you got a lot of male clients?
Okay. I'm sad to disclaimer right now. No. Here's the thing about male clients. Male clients don't like to admit they want to train. Yeah. Male client, okay, I can do it. That's what you get. I can do it, right? And then he does it. And then he quits. The male clients don't so much need form and all that. They need someone to keep their foot in their behind to be consistent. I get few male clients, but obviously, yeah, okay, I get a lot of women clients. They want to talk and, I do get them. But for the most part, yeah, we get primarily women. And it's not me marketing that way. They kind of, I've had a male client who's quick story, it's kind of funny. If you see this, he's going to be mad, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. His fiance at the time wanted me to actually train her. And I said, okay, great. So whenever I know a woman has a man, I say, I need to meet him. Give him my number. Have him call me. He need to know who I am. I need to know who he is, right? I want no misconceptions, right? And so we were training at the park. And then this guy gets out of his car. He makes a beeline straight across the field. Now, we're in an open field, nothing intimate. Always train women open in open fields. He walks straight across Piedmont Park. I mean, straight across the park, right to me. I knew he was coming to me the way he was walking. Like, he's coming to me. So I stopped. Like, hey, how you doing, man? David, progress jacket. Nice to meet you. Stick my hand out. He looks at her. He says, this the guy that's training you? Oh, no, I'm good. No. He paid me the training session money and told her get in the car.
That was quite funny. Did he enjoy the session?
he didn't stay. He just, when he saw me training her, I wasn't stretching her. I don't touch women when I train them. I don't stretch them. I keep my distance. It's training. He was like, this guy training? He looked up and down. No, we okay. Here's the money. Thank you. You get in the car. I'm not training with him. I'm like, did I do something wrong? And she was like, he didn't feel comfortable with you training me.
That's quite funny, isn't it? That's quite funny. But then that's his own issue, isn't it? There's an insecurity there, obviously, because when you're when you're secure with yourself, it doesn't really matter, does it? Really, But that's quite funny. I suppose you get that. So just to bring it to a close now, because I really enjoyed talking to you, David. But I just want to bring it to a close now, just because of time, with regards to the podcast. What wise words would you like to leave my audience with?
Don't give up. Like, don't quit. I know a guy right now, he came to me yesterday. He just got diagnosed with cancer in September. He don't know if he got it again. Older guy. He's in his 60s.
Wow.
And he looked at me, and you could see it in his eyes that he wanted hope. I stopped lifting, and I gave that man so much. He was so on fire. And I'm saying that to say this, every hell you go through, every time you feel like you are by yourself and defeated, your back against that wall, you can't get out of it. When you feel like you're swinging and you ain't going nowhere, you're not doing it for you. You're doing it for somebody in your future that will not move until they meet you. Don't quit. Somebody else needs you. They need you. That's what I will leave with them.
That's beautiful. And that's so true, really, isn't it, really? Just simple. Just very simple. Just don't quit and just be there and be there. Oh, lovely. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, David. That's brilliant. So I'm just
thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
That was brilliant. So I'm just going to say, from Tanya the Communication Doctor and from David Solomon, adios. That's brilliant.
There is just so much to take away from the show today from David. And the first thing he said is, by marrying the process, or by marrying progress, you give birth to the process. And when you give birth to the process, you can manifest something better for you. Nothing that was said was, some people get caught up in this coaching, this idea of coaching as being giving good advice. And there's a difference between coaching and good advice. And coaching is a skill set which is developed through the trials and the tribulations of life and maturity. And that was quite interesting, I felt, in terms of the way that you saw coaching and the way that you saw the difference between, I suppose, being the counsellor and all the coach. Yep, so some great takeaways. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. And to listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.